Welcome to the Fit Vegan Body Podcast with your host, Aaron Cattell, the vegan coach. The point of this podcast is to give you an in-depth but practical approach when it comes to losing weight, being healthy, or gaining muscle on a vegan or plant-based diet. We will have guests every single week to help clear up any confusion and make sure that you are 100% confident in your choice of your lifestyle.
Hey guys, welcome to another episode of the Fit Vegan Body Podcast. I am here with Adam, the plant-powered PT. Adam, how are you?
Hey guys. Hi buddy. Aaron, good to see you, mate. Good to meet you finally. Nice to be here. Thanks for asking me to jump on.
Yeah, so it's quite good because we're almost like in the exact same field, in the same city as well, obviously both online as well. So it's good to kind of talk to another like-minded person and share certain things. Hopefully we have the same opinion on most things, and I guess we're going to find out in the next half an hour when we do this podcast.
Absolutely.
Yeah, for sure. So, I mean, usually what I do is at the beginning of the podcast, I think it's quite fun to ask like a fun question rather than go straight into why are you vegan? Because that's kind of like the general start of a podcast. So, I guess my question for you is, I saw a post on your Instagram about a silent disco. Tell me more about how you got into that. Was it a silent disco? Was it a silent disco? Like a rave? No, it was like a sober rave, maybe.
Raves. Well, a friend of mine, Anthony Lowther, who's actually out in Bali at the moment, he's I've known him for years, and he got into veganism long before me, and then started to create more conscious parties. He gave up alcohol, and so he started this party called Rise and Shine. In London. I think they're going to be coming back soon, and they do a lot of kind of daytime parties, and they also started doing evening nighttime parties. I've also been to another one called We Are One. I probably started doing that about 3 or 4 years ago. And then there's obviously Morning Gloryville, which is the really, really popular one in London that's on like a weekday and a Saturday morning, you know, for people before they go to work and stuff. And the first Morning Gloryville that I went to was actually in Ministry of Sound, the club in London. So it was a really weird experience going into the Ministry of Sound at like 7 in the morning on a Wednesday, completely sober, with lots of crazy people with leggings in on and stuff. And do you know what? I love them. Like it's not that I've given up alcohol. I'm not like teetotal, but I don't drink as much as I used to by any means. But certainly going out and dancing at a sober party is just such an incredibly energizing experience, because everyone's on the same level. There's no weirdness. No one's off their heads on drugs. No one's really pissed, you know, doing whatever. Sure. So the vibe is really good. Everyone's on the same wavelength. And I found personally, I find that I dance more, and I dance more way out there when I'm at one of these kind of events that I would on a normal night, you know, and it almost becomes like a little bit of a workout because the energy is so high. And in terms of Anthony's event, Rise and Shine, there's been a couple of times over the last year that on the days I've meant to be going to the event, I've not been up for it. I've been like, I don't want to go. I can't be bothered today, but I'm going to push myself. I'm going to go. And then 3 hours later, I'm literally buzzing, you know, when you leave the party. So it's such an incredible tonic to improve your sort of mood and your state of mind. And again, being in that shared experience with other people as well is really powerful. Yeah. So, and there's obviously, you drink cacao, shots of cacao and juices and smoothies. So, you know, the energy that you're getting is a really natural high. So, yeah, they're good fun. So I totally recommend them to everyone.
It's interesting. I think in New Zealand, where I'm from, we just don't have the population to support something like that. London, you can pretty much have anything, right? And it will, you know, attract.
And it will sell, And I think people in London are just looking for a bit more, because, you know, majority of people, they're working from 9 to 5, Monday to Friday, and then they're getting drunk on a Friday, drunk on a Saturday, and then it's Monday again before you know it, and you've just spent 2 days hungover, and suddenly you start realizing, is this what my life's all about? And then you start discovering these parties, and you realize that you can actually go to a party, have an incredible time, and leave feeling better than when you arrived, rather than the opposite. And so I think it's great for people looking for to break out that traditional mold. It's better for your health as well.
Yeah, for sure. Cool. So now that we've got that question out of the way, let's hear about how the whole journey to being a plant-based PT, or I guess like the whole vegan thing, started for you.
Yeah, I mean, I started personal training in 2009. Was a massive meathead. proponent of the paleo diet. You know, I looked down my nose at vegan clients, just thought they were a pain in the ass, to be honest, at the time. And I didn't really have the knowledge and skills to plan someone's diet out with a plant-based diet, because it was all about, I was a proteinaholic. It was steak for breakfast, chicken breast throughout the day. I wasn't really focused on quality meat. I was just focused on getting my gains in and my protein. And I did a couple of fitness shows over the years. I've done five. And then the last one I did was the WBFF London at the end of 2013. And throughout that prep, I picked up a bit of a shoulder injury. Actually got something called bursitis. So it's like inflammation in the bursa in your shoulder. And it affected me so badly that I couldn't train how I had been training. So I got into the gym one day. I tried pressing sort of 215 kilo dumbbells, which is like a sort of a really light warm-up weight, and I couldn't press it. So it was the shoulder injury that forced me to, first of all, look at the way I'd been training and having to change that way I'd been training, which in turn led me to rethink what goals I was aiming for, which then led me to think, well, if I'm no longer trying to build all this muscle and I'm training like a bodybuilder, I'm doing more high intensity, more functional, you know, circuit training stuff. Do I actually need the amount of animal protein I'm eating? And it was that was really the catalyst for me. And it led me to thinking, wow, is this sustainable? How long do I want to live my life being so obsessed with animal protein? Because it felt like I was in a little bit of a prison for a long time, actually. Initially, it was just, I just intended to eat less of it, get it from better, more ethical sources, as they say. And I never intended to go fully plant-based. I went to a spiritual retreat in September 2014, which required everyone to be on a vegan diet. Felt really good. It was a good chance to experience that for me. Yeah, I came back from that retreat feeling awesome. So I thought, oh, there's something in this. So what? Okay, I'll try pescatarian for a while. So I did a month of pescatarian and a month of vegetarian. And I think, you know, since having that shoulder injury that whole year, I think my consciousness had been rising gradually. And then this spiritual retreat that I went on, and I was gradually becoming more open to a different way of eating. And then I watched three documentaries in the space of about 10 days. The first being Cowspiracy, which was really good for me because it didn't focus so much on the ethical side of stuff. It focused very much on the environmental impact, and of which I had no idea about at the time. It hadn't even ever crossed my mind at that point. This is like back in 2014. And so that kind of really started a bit of a chain reaction. And then a few days later, I watched one of Gary Yourofsky's best speeches you'll ever hear on YouTube, which had sat in my YouTube watch list for about 18 months leading up to that. I knew the time would be right eventually. And I watched that, and kind of halfway through that, I kind of burst into tears when the penny started to drop and I started to see all the kind of horrific stuff that was going on in factory farms and through animals. And it really started to sort of resonate with me. And then I think a couple of days later, I watched Earthlings, which is probably like the number one vegan turning documentary, although there's a few more out there now. So I watched that and I was like, I'm kind of done. So that was November 2014. I lost about 4 kilos when I first went vegan. I've also had digestive problems and surgery in the past as well, and I think having a slightly different physiology potentially led me to losing that weight. But it also made sense to me nutritionally, having eaten meat so heavily and relied on it so heavily for 36 years. My body was then having to totally readjust and find where to get it, all its amino acids from, and all these other nutrients, right? So I think what was going on in those early phases was actually my body was probably cannibalizing some of my muscle tissue to get those amino acids. But eventually my body kind of plateaued, my weight came back on, I got back into a good routine with creating the food and nutrition and stuff. When I was going through that phase, I did allow myself a little bit of dairy and a few eggs to take the pressure off. And I think that's, I put a lot of pressure on myself in the early days to be this perfect vegan. And I think a lot of people do. And I think that's where people come unstuck. And I'm sure we'll come on to that more in a minute. But anyway, I let the dairy go eventually and the eggs left and stuff. And I put my weight back on and then I've been good ever since. And my weight is as stable and I'm as heavy as I was before I went vegan, and have been now for quite a while. So yeah, that was it. And then probably about 2016, I decided to rebrand my personal training from Cover Fitness to the Plant Powered PT, because I just wanted to bring everything in line with my sort of my ethics and ethos. And that's the lowdown.
That brings us to where we are today.
Cool. Yeah,
I mean, there's definitely certain aspects of that story that I kind of relate to myself, because that's almost in the way that I myself, you know, became vegan and then made my business vegan. Did you go through, I guess it's almost a fear in a way of, holy crap, where am I going to get my protein from? Which is obviously the most common question that you probably still get and the most common question I get. And it sounds like you have now educated yourself on, you know, that's fine to get it from plants and that kind of thing. But at that stage where you were going from pretty much a paleolithic man onto a vegan diet, did you worry about that? And at the end of the day, what was the worst thing that actually did happen? Because I always talk to people, it's like, guess what? If you don't get as 180 grams of protein from meat, what's the worst that can happen? You're not going to die. What's the worst that can happen? And then they're like, oh yeah, you're true. I could just experiment for a month and see what happens. And I'm like, yeah. And if you still are alive and functioning, then cool. Now you've found a new way to live.
Yeah. Well, I don't think I ever worried about it. But I think because I've been sort of coaching nutrition for a few years, and even though I was very locked into like animal protein, I think as I started to make that transition mentally, I did start to sort of look into everything a bit more deeper, and just started to realize, I just started to question, actually, did I need the amount I was eating? I mean, I was on a meat-based diet. I was eating 250 to 280 grams of protein a day. And on a vegan diet now, if I had the same goals, if I was trying to put on muscle, I probably wouldn't eat any more than 160, 170 grams these days, you know? I realized just how much I'd been sort of overeating it, and how I was so protein focused, and it was so out of balance with all the other nutrients and stuff. So, and then I think it was a kind of gradual process from pescatarian, vegetarian, and then ultimately to vegan for me. The worst thing, and this doesn't happen for everyone, but I think the worst thing that happened to me was just losing those 4 kilos. Because the funny thing was, I went vegan and I lost that weight, and it was my brother's wedding. And I think I was looking a lot sort of skinnier than usual, and it was around sort of January time, and there was a lot of flus and colds going around, and then I got like a cold for a couple of weeks, which was just kind of standard. It's not like it was any normal. Everyone else was getting colds around me who weren't vegans, but of course, because I'd lost a bit of weight, because I had a cold, it was suddenly like, oh my god, is it because you're vegan now, you know? And so of course that was quite difficult, because for me it was in the early couple of months as well of this experimentation. So although I was very much behind closed doors, I was like, you know, I mean, sort of in front of everyone, I was very much strong and no, this is the way forward for me. It did make me at the time question stuff a little bit. You know, I sometimes did take on board that negativity and was just a little bit like, oh, is this right for me? Is this going to work for me? But then ultimately I sort of brushed that aside and pushed through and made it work. And I made it work because the ethical side was the reason why I went vegan in the first place. And that's, again, I'm sure we'll come onto this a little bit more, but there's a lot of people that are going through this sort of why I'm no longer vegan at the moment. And it's because I don't believe their why is strong enough. If your why is strong enough, then you'll be willing to find the solutions to your problem, you know? So don't want to go off on a tangent there, but I'm sure we'll come back to that in a bit.
No, but to be fair, that is exactly what I say to my clients as well, whether it is to do with a weight loss goal or a muscle gain goal or just why they're vegan. Or any, to be fair, anything in life, you know, if you really want your business to succeed, it's all coming down to your why. And I think is it Simon Schick's TED Talk that talks about that?
Find your why, isn't it? Or something, yeah. Yeah.
And it does come down to that, because I think for everybody, if you want to be vegan, if you truly want to be vegan, you will find a way to make it work. And some people, you know, just give up too easy, I think, or they don't want it enough, or they just haven't got a clue and they decide to not really go out of their way to find out the answers. And, you know.
Well, definitely. And I think for me, everyone thought when I went vegan, it was for health and nutritional reasons. And I ended up saying to everyone, no, it wasn't. It was totally for ethical reasons. Because when I was going vegan, I was, from the vegan side, I was getting, oh, it improves cardiovascular disease, reduces cholesterol, it's amazing, it's going to improve your health no end and give you loads of energy. And then the other side of the fence was the side of the industry that I'd come from. And I wasn't unhealthy at the time. You know, I was eating a lot of meat, but I was also eating a lot of vegetables and fruits and stuff. So I ate a pretty good diet. So I knew the health benefits on that side. And that what I've learned is that there's bias. You can back up anything, any kind of bias with a study. And so for me, I couldn't really find a strong enough black and white argument from the health perspective. So, and then to me, the ethical side of stuff was totally black and white. It was like, you know, if you want to eat meat, an animal has to die and suffer and be traumatized to go through that to deliver that to you. And if you're not willing to do that killing and slaughtering yourself, then I don't think you deserve to be eating it. And so for me, that very black and white reason, and because it resonated with me on such a heart level, such a deep level, and upset me once I really connected with it. That's what gave me the strong enough sort of why. And I think a lot of people who do go vegan, this is maybe probably generalizing, but I think if you go vegan just for the health reasons, then potentially if you come up against a period of time where you're not quite getting enough of something, you are feeling a bit deficient, your energy is a little bit low. Sometimes I think people who have gone just for health reasons are going to question it, because it's not delivering them the health aspect that they've been sort of promised by everyone else. And I think it's then it's much easier for you just to go, well, I'm just going to have some eggs and some fish. Whereas if you've made the decision from an ethical point of view, and you relate to the trauma and suffering, that the reason for going vegan is so much greater than your taste buds and your convenience, you know? So.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah. And I think, you know, the people that have recently, you know, the kind of more influencer type that have kind of gone off their vegan diet because of those reasons, it's almost like they're not nutritionists. They don't like, it's almost like a common thing. It's like they've done a water fast for 21 to 30 days and have gone completely raw. And then they're questioning why is their health and their gut not working properly. You just ate a whole plant-based food diet and it contained food and not just water, then your body would probably still be in a lot better situation. So they've kind of gone from extremes to extremes and then wondered why their body's not working. It's like, well, you know, I know that you...
Exactly. They're just not being sensible about it. They're not taking a methodical kind of approach to critical thinking. Like, I've just found out from a blood test recently that I'm deficient in zinc. Although it's slightly harder to get true results from a zinc perspective. But so I found this out, and instead of going, oh my God, vegan diet's not giving me my zinc. Oh, well, I need some oysters and eggs and whatever. I've gone, okay, I'm zinc deficient. Why could this be? Okay, it could be partly because it's a little bit harder to get on a vegan diet. There could be other things going on. You know, I've been drinking more coffee. Okay, so caffeine can affect mineral absorption. I've had digestive disorders in the past. Have they fully healed? You know, I've been suffering a little bit of stress and depression the last 6 months. That's been affecting me. Have I been sleeping that well? You know, so I took the decision to look beyond just that. I'm zinc deficient. Point the finger at the vegan diet. You know, let's. And I think that's where health is. It's such a culmination of lots of different elements. And it becomes too easy just to point the finger at veganism and not take responsibility for other lifestyle factors that might have played a role in that.
Yeah, 100%. Like for me, I did my blood test and I was vitamin D deficient this winter. And you know what? The reason why was because I stopped taking my vitamin D supplement over the winter. And like a month earlier, I'd stopped taking it. It wasn't because I was vegan. It was because I'm spending my winter in London and there's no sun.
Exactly.
And I stopped taking my vitamin D thing. So yeah, that's not a vegan diet.
Yeah, and there was totally. And just because you're a meat eater doesn't mean you're going to be not become deficient in something. There was a great study, I think it was in the International Sports Medicine Journal, something like that. I can provide it. And they did a study on 70 different athletes' diets, and every single one came back deficient in at least three nutrients. And so that just goes to show that, you know, it's not just about plant-based diet and deficiencies. It's in general, it's an epidemic in our society. You know, due to environmental pollution, again, stress is a big problem with it, and obviously soil quality and feed quality. And I mean, even, you know, since I wrote a book last summer that I'm just trying to fund at the moment. But when I was doing some research for that, I realized that even if you eat meat, and especially if you eat factory farmed meat, those animals are also being supplemented with minerals and vitamins. You know, it's a million-dollar industry, the animal feed industry, specifically supplementing into the feed, because the feed that they're being given doesn't contain all the nutrients. So the animals need those nutrients as well. So, you know, you can either you just leave out the middleman and take your B12, you know.
Yeah, and the same with your omega-3 from algae instead of eating the fish, just eat the fish sheets. Okay, cool. So what do you think that I'm going to kind of go into people that are listening in terms of trying to be as fit as possible as a vegan? What kind of things do you think that all of your clients kind of have in common that once they figure it out, they get way better results? Like, is it the eating? Is it the exercise? Is it something specific about those? Is it something completely different?
I think initially there's a little bit of confusion because most of us have been brought up on the kind of the macronutrient calorie kind of model of looking at nutrition. And when you're eating a meat-based diet, it's much easier to go, that's a protein, that's a fat, that's a carbohydrate, or at least your protein source is pretty much only protein or a bit of fat, you know. Whereas on a vegan diet, your proteins usually come combined with fats or carbohydrates or maybe both. So I think that's, so it's the education of where those different macronutrients come from initially. And I sort of say to, I just say to clients very much, you know, I just try and get people to look at things, move away from the calorie model initially, just get everyone just to look at quality nutrients and where they come from. And if you want to put things into classifications of protein, carbohydrates and fats, I just say to clients, look at that food group, see which macronutrient is the most dominant, and then just class that as your protein. You know, so beans, for instance, I mean, beans are quite, you know, high in carbohydrates as well, but I'd still class them as a protein source just because they've got a decent amount of protein from a plant-based diet's perspective. So I'd always class that as a protein, whether they get more carbohydrates with it. So it's not as, I guess, a detailed anal approach as before. But I think that's good in terms of getting people to step back and just have a bigger picture view of food as well. So I'd say that's probably the first thing. And I think once that clicks into place for people, and they start being able to kind of build their plates of food up with all these different elements, then it gets much easier. Yeah, that's a game changer, I think. Yeah, and I've written documents for clients on the principles of plant-based nutrition and templates for templates for their nutrition and stuff.
Yeah, I would 100% agree. It's about re-educating. Like, we look at, for some messed up reason, we look at food as single macronutrients rather than what it is, which is food. It's just food. It's not it's like a whole food.
And it is crazy because I kind of believe that we shouldn't really be looking at it. We shouldn't be breaking it down the way it is. We've sort of destroyed food. It's this amazingly synergistic thing that has everything we need in it. And you just need to, I always use the term eat the rainbow, and I'm sure you do as well. And I just think, move away, stop talking about calories, stop talking about macronutrients, and just say to people, eat the rainbow. And just get people to eat. I always talk about nutrient diversity and nutrient density. And, you know, if you can focus on as diverse a diet as you can with as many different coloured fruits, vegetables and foods in it, then you're going to be fine, you know.
Yeah, 100%. And I think, yeah, you touched on a good point is, you know, we have everything we need in the food in its whole form. And when we categorise it in those individual macronutrients, not only is it going to have probably not the best effect on our physical health, but also our mental health. I think a lot of people drive themselves absolutely crazy trying to match their macronutrients when it comes to like my fitness pal. Oh, but my fitness pal says I need this much protein and I'm not getting it because my beans have got carbs in it. It's like, that's not a bad thing.
Just let it go. A few grams or a few percent, it's not going to make a big difference.
And then that obviously means that they find it too hard, and then they're more likely to give up, and then the result that they wanted, you know, doesn't happen. So it's about making it as easy as possible, for them. And I think for anyone listening, on top of that is having the mindset as well to actually being like, you know, I'm actually going to focus on this because I really want this, which again comes down to your reason why, is super important, you know, because you'll find a way if you really want your goal.
Definitely. And I like the calorie, it depends where, for me, it's very much goal dependent and where the client is in terms of their understanding of food. So if someone wants a more extreme physical transformation, or they've got a very specific goal and they've already got a good level of understanding of foods, certainly plant-based nutrition and stuff, then the calorie model is a really good place to start because it enables you to get very detailed results, more detailed results. But for the individual who's at a kind of more basic level and who's just looking to get into good shape, it's an unnecessarily, like you said, additional amount of stress to put into the process that's just not necessary.
Yeah, 100%. I think, like I mentioned people calories, and then if they really, really want to be a bodybuilder or figure competition person, then, you know, look closer at that stuff. Like, most people don't want that.
Yeah.
Most people just want an easy way to lose weight.
Yeah, I mean, whether, I think just like I questioned, how long can I live like this eating all this animal protein? It's just like, do you want to literally spend your whole life every day counting all your calories and weighing all your food? I mean, what a sad existence, you know. For 3 months, cool, and you've got a goal, go for it, you know, knuckle down, get detailed, get the amazing results that you want, but don't live your life like that. Learn good lifestyle, nutritional, balanced nutrition techniques that are so simple and sustainable, really.
Cool. I 100% agree. Now, one other thing that I'm sure you hopefully agree with me on is the health and fitness industry as a whole. Do you think it needs to change a little bit? Do you think that we have a massive issue with the way that our health and fitness industry is kind of shaped at the moment? And if you were to change it, where would you start?
I think it's changed. Like, I got qualified in 2009, and I that's when I did my first fitness show. And at the time, the fitness, there was obviously bodybuilding shows have been around a long time, and there's been but fitness shows were really relatively new then. They weren't that prevalent, and social media wasn't that, you know, full of people's six packs and stuff. So, but it has got out of hand since then. And what we've got now is that someone with 50,000 followers who just gets their body out in a bikini or a pair of tight shorts and has a great physique is giving lots of people advice. And I think it's difficult. It's dangerous on two levels, really. I think it's, you know, genetics always plays a big role in what someone's body type is going to be. So it's a bad thing to, first of all, start comparing yourself to someone else who might actually have superior genetics to you. Some people can look at a dumbbell and put on muscle. Some people are naturally 5% body fat, you know. So it's social media is creating this comparison thing, which I don't think is doing people any good. People are putting their faith in influencers who have thousands and thousands of followers but don't necessarily have qualifications and life experience. And I think you've just touched on that with some of the YouTubers who are flipping with the vegan stuff. I think with that push that direction, the growth of the more narcissistic side of social media and the fitness industry, I think we're also going to see a push in the other direction. I think there will be missing out as people actually start to realize that they need someone, or they need a coach, or they need some education, or they need a bit more depth in what they're learning. So I think the more coaches with really good education that we can create and put out there into the market, that'll help balance everything out. Unfortunately, social media is what it is, and something like Instagram it's all about a visual stimulus, isn't it? So, you know, of someone in a bikini is always going to get, you know, again, my friend Anthony, he always posts modeling pictures of himself with his top off, but then he also posts a lot of very sort of spiritual kind of and heartfelt stuff, and I know it infuriates the hell out of him that he'll get like 10 likes on this kind of really heartfelt spiritual kind of metaphor that he's put out there and this message that he's trying to spread, and then he'll get thousands of likes, the topless photo. And I think it's the sort of nature of Instagram, really. People react to the visual side of stuff. So I just think better education. I think like myself, there's other great coaches online, and I think the more we can kind of, I think, come together, collaborate, to put out really good information that's balanced, that's sensible, that's supportive, I think that'll have a big impact, because people will start searching for something else once they realize there's nothing of substance in the other side of the fitness industry. I think
influencers are a big thing. Like, there are good ones out there, but there are also terrible ones out there. Like, what are they influencing? And they need to be responsible, right? They need to be like, you know, there's plenty of, you know, like the cast of, what's it called, Made in Chelsea, or like The Only Way is Essex, that promote these, you know, is it booty tea? Is that what it is?
Oh, yeah, I've seen that.
Promote those things. And then like these little teenage girls now buy into it because they want to look like these people. And it's like, if you're an influencer, you should be way more responsible than, you know, trying to mislead people with an ad about some tea that makes your butt bigger,
some other product. Definitely. I think it's a sad state of the world we live in, because people are trying to make money. People have got to make money because everyone's got to pay their bills and stuff. And I think if someone's ethical compass isn't as strong as another person's, then they're going to get persuaded to promote this product and that product for a few extra quid. If that's their kind of driving factor over their ethical kind of concerns. I'm always getting approached by Arbonne, Herbalife, you know, network marketing people all the time. And I'm just like, I recommend products and services to clients because I think their value, and their value is in their journey and helping them and assisting them in their journey, not because I'm trying to make lots of money off selling these products. That it's not part of my business. I'm here to educate and coach people. That's what I enjoy doing. So yeah, there's a lot of that out there at the moment.
I get those Herbalife and Airborne messages as well, and it's just kind of like, yeah, no thank you.
Yeah, but I can see it, I mean, you probably can as well. I can see it a mile off. Everyone starts with the same script. I'll send you some scripts. I've got this great business opportunity, and it will be like, oh, is it all right if I send you over a video? Literally every message I get, it's almost carbon copy in the first couple of paragraphs. I did a post on Instagram not long ago about my, you know, me being a network marketing no-go zone. So when anyone sends me one of these messages, I send them that post just so they get the message across quite quickly. But and it just shows a lack of creativity and how, what's the word, disingenuous the whole process is, really. It's not, you're not about a quality product that you're really championing. You just want to get more people involved in the
process. I think with a lot of like the Herbalife stuff is the people that are messaging us and probably messaging other people, they're not qualified nutritionists or trainers. No. They're almost just trained salespeople that have, you know, they make money when you buy their product. So it's not coming from a place of like, you know, what you've said and what I say is, you know, it's not coming from a place of, well, we want to help you be healthier. It's coming from a place of, I want to help you because you're going to help me. You're going to help me pay my bills. So, you know, I think it's really important to, you know, to figure out where that want or that help is coming from. Cool. So let's, I mean, obviously we are both personal trainers. So there's probably some people that are wondering, what would you recommend as the best exercise or exercises that would be better for fat loss or for muscle gain? And I, of course, I know the answers to this one, but I want to hear, come from you as well, and your own personal opinion, to obviously people that are listening that want to just hear it from another place.
Well, that's such a, I mean, it's such a, it's such a big question. You know, there's so many different ways to answer that, really. And again, it's very much dependent on the client's goals, the client's body awareness, their current fitness levels. Ultimately, you know, you can't out-train a poor diet. And if you haven't got the foundations right with your nutrition, then a fancy exercise program and fancy supplements isn't going to help you out. So, that, you know, really the first place to start, if body composition and health is your goal, then, you know, good nutritional foundation. From an exercise point of view, I don't think it's necessary just the exercise, it's how you exercise as well. If you're looking to stimulate your metabolism, you know, for fat loss, then obviously high intensity interval training, getting yourself out of breath, creating an oxygen debt is really important. I could probably give someone the same exercises, but I could write the workout in three different ways that would give them a different response to that training. If we're getting down to some of my favorite exercises, I think I did a post the other week for the lower body. I think if I could only pick one lower body exercise, then walking dumbbell lunges would be the number one for me, just because of the target areas that they hit, the risk reward in terms of the client's ability to perform that exercise. So I think that would be my number one, lower body exercise, walking dumbbell lunges. Upper body, what would upper body be? Well, you'd have to have a push and a pull in there. And I think I'd have to, again, if I was, it's very specific, isn't it? I'd have to put in some form of press up, I think, really, from a push perspective, not really knowing what the specifics of a client we're talking about is here.
So it's like asking you how long is a piece of string, right?
Yeah, exactly. So I'm trying to give answers that encompass a lot of abilities as well here. And then for a pull, I'd say like the TRX, doing like a TRX inverted row or different variations of that would give you an amazing pulling movement. Big fan of the TRX. Obviously, if someone's looking for a bodybuilding program and they've got good shoulder mobility and everything else, then obviously you'd be getting them to do bench pressing and chin-ups and all kinds of stuff. Those would be my open-ended questions. And I'm a big fan of the trap bar deadlift, I must say, actually. The trap bar deadlift or hex bar, I think it's got to be one of the best bits of kit in the gym because it gets people to perform a squat and a deadlift at the same time without putting them into positions that might cause them more problems with their lower back. So I'm a big fan of that trap bar deadlift, yeah.
Have you got a instructional video of that one on your Instagram? Because I know you do have a few exercises on there.
I haven't at the moment. Maybe I'll put one up.
Yeah, now that
I'll
you've
talked about it. I'll get one up now. Now I've talked about it, yeah.
Yeah, I think I guess there's no real right answer, but the kind of way that I'm reading between the lines is not, it's never one size that fits all. It comes to exercise, depends on your ability, but depends on your goal. But I think also importantly, it depends on what you enjoy, because you're probably not going to do a program too regularly if there's exercises in there or a kind of workout that you don't enjoy. Because at the end of the day, most people, you know, want to enjoy their workouts. So they need to kind of enjoy it. Of course, it's our job to kind of make sure that they do, or at least understand that there might be a little bit of an enjoyment to get to the enjoyment phase, I suppose, like a love hate kind of thing.
Yeah, definitely. My fits in perfectly with that. My first mentor when I first started personal training, Dave Peterson, amazing coach, great head trainer. He said to me when I first started PTing, he was just like, you've got to give your clients a little bit of what they want and a little bit of what they need. You know, so you've got to kind of look at their goals and look at the kind of underlying issues that they may have, and you've got to give them that sort of that structural work, you know, the stuff that's going to be good for their body. And if they've come to you saying, I want to improve my butt or I want to get bigger arms, then you've got to give them some bicep curls maybe and some get their glutes burning towards the end of the workout, you know. So they're going away feeling like I've got what I asked for, and they're going away and you know that you've been looking after them and you've given them a good level of care as well. So yeah. I think that's a good one for all, I think all PTs to kind of remember, actually.
Yeah, and I think even more so is like people always asking for, I want abs or a flatter stomach. They almost feel like you have to give them sit-ups to make them feel like they're getting a flatter stomach. And we both know that there's probably a thousand different exercises that are probably better than doing sit-ups to give them a stronger core. But, you know, they need to feel like they're doing something that they think is the right way to do it,
which is totally
cool. Well, I think that is pretty much all I wanted to ask you for now. Of course, we're gonna talk in the future. For people that are listening, how can they, I suppose, reach out to you or find you or anything like that?
My website's theplantpoweredpt.com, and I'm on Instagram, theplantpoweredpt, so I'm kind of hanging out there, I guess, mostly. Just want to do a quick plug. I'm currently crowdfunding for my book, which is a pretty uphill struggle task. It's quite difficult. I'm at 22%. I'm with a publisher called Unbound, so I'm just trying to kind of crowdfund the book at the moment. So you can go to my website or Instagram profile and check that out. I'd appreciate any form of pledge or share on social media. It would be amazing. So, that's cool. Pretty much it. Yeah.
Well, thank you so much for your time. I mean, I'm going to say this evening because it's this evening where I am, but it's also in the morning where you are. Thank you for taking the time to have a chat.
Cool, buddy. Thanks for having me on. Really appreciate it. And I love all your work and everything that you're doing on social media. You've got a cool account and you put out some great content, man. So,
Thank you.
Thanks.
Talk soon.
And that's all for today, guys. Hope you enjoyed today's episode. Of course, we'll see you next week. If you have questions or want to find out more information about working with me, check out my Instagram at @thevegan_coach, my website, thevegancoach.org, or just check out my Facebook page. Have a great day and see you next week.